Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you. We've got both Kirk and JB here with us this evening. Hi, guys.
Good evening.
How's it going?
Good. I have a an announcement and then two pleas. The two pleas are one is facetious and the other is of no big deal, except I'm told it might be helpful to me, and if it's, but it's actually a genuine request. The announcement first is that the East Coast, the Central East Coast, has been under some unbelievably difficult weather. We received 12 inches of rain in 6 hours two nights ago,
Wow. And
that darn near destroyed the place. I mean, we're fortunate that none of our structures were destroyed, but we almost lost our bridge, and we almost lost our dam. And we have been working diligently with the crews and material trying to shore everything up. And I am playing this evening with a badly wrenched back as I tried to pretend like I was 20 years old again and was tossing around the 75-pound retaining stones on uneven ground and really tweaked it. So if I grimace, you may hear it. I apologize. But also, if I go silent, it is because we have another thunderstorm tonight, and it has already knocked out the power a couple of times. So if I go away, it's only because of the storm had other ideas. Now, the facetious play. I read a number of articles this week from America's leading spokespeople who claim to be working on behalf of God that say that if Jesus were to return, it's for darn sure he wouldn't be on a donkey. And that to reach the world, what you need is not just jet transport. You need a jet that can fly anywhere in the world. Nothing less than a $75 million jet will do. And
so we start passing the hat to get your...
Yeah, so these evangelists are all reaching out to their congregation, to anyone, and says, if you want Jesus' work spread, you ought to pray about it, and I'm sure he's going to tell you that it's appropriate for me to have a $75 million jet that you all pay for. So, Kirk, we've been doing this wrong, evidently. We were really of the impression that if you simply take the time to find out what God is actually telling us, you translate his words accurately, and then share the insights that those words provide in a way that that is consistent with what he is offering and who he is, and you make that available free to people via the most effective medium in the world, which would be online, whether it's these shows, which we do verbally, or the books, which we provide on a number of different websites, in their entirety free, that God was more than capable of using. In fact, I even found out that he referenced what we are writing. All that is left is signed. And that even notice us as a choker, as twigs grafted into the branch in the tree of lives, making this available. And yet we don't seem to need our congregation to fund our salaries, give us, make donations, or provide a test. I have
you missed that class.
Yeah, you know.
We haven't found it yet.
No, I haven't found it. I don't think we're going to find it yet.
No, I don't think so.
You know, you don't need an open hangar, you need an open mind. If you're trying to understand what I said, you aren't going to find it at 40,000 feet, but you might find it if you opened the Torah and read it. I just thought it was hilarious, and how all their...
Okay, what's a more effective way to communicate anyways? Put it freely available online or travel around the world and charge people exorbitant fees to come hear you speak?
Yeah, and burning jet fuel. You know, and by the way, he missed the whole point on Yosha, even if he had his name correct. There's a reason he's riding a donkey. And there's a reason that he wouldn't fly in a $75 million airplane if you gave him one. The donkey was a symbol of how humble God is, how unpretentious God is, how desiring God is to serve as opposed to be served. That donkey is incredibly important to understand. And yes, if he were back in material form, he'd come in on a donkey because he's unpretentious.
Mm-hmm.
Not like these pretentious, arrogant bastards that are claiming to represent him. That's the story that they miss. A God who is unpretentious, who is approachable, isn't a God to be feared. A God to be known, approached, and loved. They missed all of that with a stupid donkey reference. There's a reason that Yosha never left Yisrael. There's a reason, I don't even think he left the province of Yehuda. There's a reason for these things. And there's a reason that his Torah, his prophets, his Psalms, is available to anybody, anywhere around the world. It's his words that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Not his mode of transportation. And with this, Nimrods don't seem to have any appreciation, and I use Nimrods literally, is that he's not coming back with a physical body. He wasn't resurrected with a physical body. He will not be returning with a physical body. He sure as hell ain't going to need an airplane. Coming back as a spiritual being, as light.
Yeah. How many, what, 75 miles he traveled and, like, instantly? After he came back, I don't think he's going to need a plane.
Right. In fact, 150 round trip. If you look at the Roman measurements of the stadium, because he had to go there, he had dinner with the fellows and still met with his disciples in the open room, transporting himself through the wall. Because his energy, time no longer matters, and therefore distance is irrelevant when time no longer matters, because distance. Traveling over distance is equated to speed. Speed is simply distance over time. But if time becomes immaterial, distance is immaterial. So he could have traveled from another galaxy and another solar system.
Or another dimension.
Yeah. Or another dimension. In fact, he did come from another dimension. He was up in the seventh and returned to us. So, when you're transformed into light, as he will be on his return, you don't need an airplane.
Well, airplane
things
last.
Okay, for the modest, serious request is that I was a bad boy according to a policeman, and I was driving my car, actually my wife's car, too fast, And a lot of extenuating circumstances. It could be 5 miles an hour too fast. That is not what it was written down. So in this particular case, I actually have to appear before the judge as opposed to simply paying a ticket. And I haven't had a ticket. I've had one ticket in 10 years. And, it was for 9 over the speed limit. So, you know, it's not like I'm a habitual offender of the speed and driving law. But anyway, this particular situation is a lot of extenuating circumstances, and I think I will prevail on the facts. But nonetheless, the attorney representing me, the guy that I've known, because he's also represents this district, and a really good guy. I've had him at my home in the past. And he said, you know, in addition to the testimony you're going to provide, he said, just because you've never met him, you've never been in court before, never been before a judge before, it will help you if you have a half a dozen short letters that are written by people who've interacted with, who could say something charitable about you, that your testimony to them has been truthful, it has been helpful, and you've been willing to be of help to them without charge. So he doesn't want this anybody I've done business with, but simply people that I've reached out to that can attribute, attest to my honesty, forthrightness, and willingness to help simply because I want to help, not because I'm being paid to help. So if a number of you, you know, end up with find email at yada yada, email at yada yada with .com will all come to me. Just write it under your name. It'd have to be, so that it's credible. It'd have to have an address and to sign it. But, you know, a paragraph or two in your own words. That, yeah, he's forthright and honest in his approach. Now, that being said, the storm, you know, they do say that Hasatan is a the crimson power of the air, and therefore is a storm spirit, right? Well, mm-hmm. As a result, my internet was just knocked out. The lights in my building just went out, which means that my computer shut down, and my computer has the text of the message we were going to begin with. And while I have read it just 15 minutes ago, Kirk, my guess is you have it open in front of you. Would you mind reading the passage? This is the passage that we went over in Yashia. We went over it Barashi. We went over it 23, was it 7? Is that the number that I gave you just a few minutes ago?
2213.
2213. We went over it at the end of our program last week, but there's a couple of words in it that are necessary, I think, for us to more fully develop and to see how they play out later in Yashaya 53. And so, Kirk, if you wouldn't mind reading that to us, the power has flickered back on, but now I'm going to have to restart my computer, and then, you know, I've got to find the word dive, so it's going to take me a while to get back on track. But if you wouldn't mind reading that, and there's the two words, the Achaz word, which speaks of being fastened, and the Chabak word that talks about this crown of this being caught in these intertwined thorns. Okay. In particular, the last one, how it appears and is woven into the text not once but twice in that powerful Yashaya 53 passage. I don't want us to miss that connection because I think it was put here to draw our attention there to explain. I think in my view, I think it's very much like Yosha citing Mizmor Psalm 22 mm-hmm. as he was affixed to the upright pole, because it not only explained that this would occur, but it explained what was going to happen and why it was occurring. So maybe I'm reading too much into the repeat of the word, or at least the root of the word, but I think the same thing may be true here, and I don't want to miss it. I don't want any of us to miss it.
Okay. It says, then Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked and acknowledged the situation regarding the one who was actually observed a ram, and after this was caught in the intertwined thicket by his horns. Now, the worst cult is a Chaz. You want to start there?
Well, I just all I want to do is make people aware that for a moment that a Chaz is the verb there, and we're going to talk about it in just a moment.
Okay. And then to continue on then, and Abraham walked over and accepted the ram, and he offered him up as an uplifting sacrifice in place of his son. Let's see. And that's 22:13. And then, you want me to read in the expanded part, or?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, then, Abraham, of course, is father who raises up and lifts up those who stand up and reach up, the father of abundant enrichment and merciful father, our father of multitudes who are confused and troublesome. He lifted up, which is Nasa, he raised his eyes, his perspective accordingly, and he looked, then he observed, seeing and inspecting, perceiving and understanding, discovering as he considered what was being revealed in the qual imperfect, and acknowledged the situation regarding the one this was actually about, observed, which is Henna, closely examining and paying attention while standing upright and looking up, noticing all the details and all the overall narrative and circumstance, including the fact that right now and at the present time, behold, a ram, a yield is the word we used, a perfect male lamb, a leader of the flock, the framework of a doorway and or its doorpost and jamb, the upright pillar to support the home and the source of empowerment, vigor, health, and noble and mighty one. And after this, which is a char, after this, a char following these things, subsequently in reference to another time, was caught, a chaz, was seized and held, was fastened to and attached, actually embracing for the purpose of providing an inheritance. It's in the Niffle Perfect. For a limited time, the ram carries out and endures the effects of the verb being seized, held, fastened, and attached to support. This means to provide a comprehensive inheritance. In, which is ba, within, by, or among, the intertwined thickets. That's a kabak. An intertwined, entangled, twisted, and interwoven, circuitous, and burdensome thorn bush, akin to kabeb, circular, or kabob, to turn things around, and kabal, by bearing the burdens of others. By his horns, which is Karen Hue, his brilliant rays of light from the supernatural source, his glowing and shining appearance as a result of emitting the irradiant light, also his trumpet comprising the ram's horn used to signal an important message. And Abraham, father who raises up and lifts up, walked over Halak and accepted, grasped hold of, obtained and received, and the qual imperfect, the ram, Ha-Ayel, the perfect male lamb, the leader of the flock, the framework and doorway, the doorpost and jamb. And he offered him up as an uplifting sacrifice. He ascended, going up to lift him up as an acceptable solution for the uplifting offering. In the Heifer imperfect, the action of the subject, Abraham calls the object, which is the ram, to participate in the uplifting experience, which would have ongoing implications throughout time. In place of, instead of, and during an orderly arrangement of time, with one event reasonably and rationally following after another, as an exchange on behalf of the relationship for the sake of his son. Same one we go back to?
Yeah, that is spectacular. That the things I wanted to reinforce first of all is AL. This time AL is used to speak of the male lamb. It is the lamb who is the leader of the flock. That would be Yosha. It is a sacrificial lamb, perfect. It's also the Passover lamb. AL means framework of the doorway, because this lamb is providing the doorway to life. This is the doorway of Pesach. It includes the doorpost and the jamb. Additionally, since Yosha is the AL, he is the upright pillar supporting the home. And as a result of our AL, our source of empowerment, vigor, and health all are derived from what he would do on this day. The AL serves as the mighty one. It's it's, letters are really important in the Hebrew alphabet. AL is the...
Aleph, yes.
Aleph, yeah, the Aleph, which is the describes exactly what this is. It's the ram's head, right?
Yes, sir.
And the ram's head is facing, the diagonal of it is facing towards that outreached and open hand of Yahweh, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's reaching to the upside down staff, the shepherd's staff, but upside down, because right side up, that shepherd's staff is a helps the steady the walker. Upside down, it is a source of help, of assistance that can lift and guide a
sheep,
right, to rescue a sheep. Those are the three letters. Aleph is a powerful. It's the ram's head, the same letter Aleph that's used in Father and in God. It is the it's followed by the first letter in Yahweh's name, the outreached hand, the open hand, and then the shepherd's staff. So this is not only the Lamb of God. This is the shepherd of God. This is the hand of God. Those three characters say, He is the Lamb of God, He is the hand of God, He is the shepherd of God. Now, if ever three letters had power to us, it's A.L.
Those three, absolutely.
Now, the next was a cause. He was, and when you look at the definition of a cause, you know, he was seized. In this case, he was, his brilliant horns, radiating light, were seized by this thicket. The cause is indicative of the fact that Yosef would be seized by the Sanhedrin. He was held in a pit by the high priest. He was fastened to and attached to an upright pole by the Romans while actually embracing this horrific treatment, because he realized that his purpose was to provide an inheritance on behalf of the covenant's children. So these special insights are brought to our attention all by the benefit of that Niphil stem, which you covered in the Amplified reading. It's, and in the perfect conjugation, whereby for a limited period of time, the ram carried out and endured the effect of the verb, being seized, held, fastened, and attached to support this means to provide a comprehensive inheritance for us. It's one of those places where I couldn't help but write, you know, it's amazing what we can learn when only we try.
Yes.
Now, the next verb, the reason I really wanted to go back to this is because I wanted to make certain that we looked up and considered why this word, Chabak, was used. Chabak is the twisted thorns that the ram's gleaming light horns of light were entangled in. And we talked about, you know, that could be symbolic of the crown of horns, of thorns that Yosha was made to wear by the Romans.
Right.
But I thought I thought it was far more indicative of being trapped in kind of the twisted and thorny briar that is religion.
Mm-hmm.
That religion is there's nothing beneficial. It's thorny. It's twisted. It entraps people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the combination of the circular reasoning and the entangled nature, the twisted nature of religion is how I interpret Chabak and why it was used. But that was just a tiny little aspect of it, because when we do as we have been trained to do, Kirk, which is, and JB, I know you're doing this too, and you may be off with your daughter at the moment, but when we...
No, I'm here.
When we translate, one of our standard operating procedures is to never be complacent. If we're dealing with a noun, always search for the verb that is the actionable root. Because you can learn so much about the verb. The verbal root of nouns in Hebrew defines them. And this is an impressive example of that. Chabak is from the verb chabla. Chabla means to bear burdens. So these thorny thickets that were intertwined to form a circle, this verb that describes that is used in Yeshaya, Isaiah 53:1-12. 53:1-12 is probably the single most exciting, clear, dramatic presentation of why the Passover lamb was so important and how Yosha used the Passover lamb to our benefit. And it's really powerful. And in that testimony, which is so essential to understanding this Bereshit story of the test, that verb is used not once, but twice. And what that tells me is that this is exactly like Mizmor Psalm 22. Where in Mizmor Psalm 22, when Yosha was on the upright pole at Passover, that he cited the opening line of Mizmor Psalm 22 so that anybody who just had an open mind and took a moment to look up what that psalm says would understand who he is, what he's doing there, what is going to happen next, what the benefits are going to be, and how all of this plays into Yahweh's provision, the benefit of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and Yosha's role in fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. So it's when those things happen, we have been conditioned to pay very close attention. So here, this entire episode on Mount Moriah, to revere Yah, is clearly an enactment and a dress rehearsal for Pesach 40 Yobel later on exactly the same place. And in using this word, Chabak, whose verbal root is Chabla, twice in Yeshaya 53, Yahweh is explaining the specific role of the Passover lamb, of the very lamb whose horns of radiating light were caught in the thicket at this day while Abraham and Yitzchak were affirming their place in the covenant with Yahweh. So all we have to do is look up how that was used in that context, and the entire picture unfolds for us. So with that being the case, I'm going to begin this. I have lights again. Guys, if I go dark, I'll
leave for the time.
Finish it for me. But this is a amplified version of Yeshaya 53:1-12.
1-12, yeah.
Right. And it twice mentions Chabal, and I'm going to share it both times. Okay. It opens with it, by the way. Nevertheless, our illnesses and affliction, he himself lifted up and carried away once and for all. And our mental anguish he bore, dragging it away, Chabal. And yet we ourselves devised a plot which considered him reaching out bodily, then forced into being viciously beaten and killed by God for responding to and answering the call to be afflicted. So he was pierced as a result of our defiance, our rebellion, our errant approaches. Then he was put under tremendous pressure, crushed and slandered, harassed, diminished, humiliated, and pulverized for our guilt because we were wrong. As a result, the punishment for our reconciliation was placed upon him. So with his bruising blows and ability to unite in fellowship, we are healed, approaching restoration and renewal. Almost all of us, like migrating sheep, have wandered away from the correct path. Each individual has turned to his own way. And so Yahweh has interceded with him on behalf of all of our guilt as a result of us being wrong. He paid what was required, and he responded, answering the call to be afflicted. And yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb, he was directed and delivered forcibly to the slaughter, confronting the ruthless beasts and deadly butchers. Like a sheep facing his shears, he was silent. He did not open his mouth. Through oppressive incarceration and on account of the means to justify and resolve disputes, he was led away on behalf of those who would live with him in future generations, who would give serious consideration to the situation and recognize that truthfully he ceased to exist in and was separated from the material realm of the living. Because of the defiance and rebellion of my people, the assault upon the plague of death was directed towards him. So powerful here that not only are we being equated to sheep that migrate away, but that he is being equated to a lamb, and therefore to the Passover lamb. And he gave us, and he gave him over to the unrighteous in conjunction with his rock-hewn tomb associated with the termination of his biological life and with rich people. He was elevated to the summit of his mountain. The Most High had engaged in nothing wrong, nothing violent, nothing destructive or deadly, no act of terrorism or anything frightening. He had not plundered or looted anyone, nor had he demonstrated anything which would have involved additional yeast, and thus he did not engage in religion or politics. Boy, he is a lot different than the Christian God and the Islamic God, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Therefore, nothing deceitful or misleading, nothing which would have caused someone to derive a false impression of his words and deeds was spoken by him. Yeah, read the Sermon on the Mount, folks. Process what he said. And so it was that the will and purpose of Yahweh for him to suffer the effect of being crushed. Yeah, he wasn't crushed on that upright pole, folks. His soul was a rusted shield. That happened on Matzah, not Passover. He thereby interceded by inflicting him with the plague, by the concession and condition of appointing his soul to suffer the punishment to serve as compensation. They did not touch his soul on the upright pole of Pesach, folks. The only way for his soul to be afflicted was his soul left his physical body and went into Sheol on Matzah. The body was the Passover lamb. The soul served the purpose of unyeasting our souls from the corruption of religion and politics. Then he will actually and continually look upon his offspring because he will prolong his days. In other words, his soul was released from incarceration in Sheol. And the will and affairs, the longing and desire, the affirmative actions of Yahweh through his hand. Remember, we just found out that Yahusha is the Lamb of God, is the hand of Yahweh, will succeed and prosper, accomplishing the goals to thrive and advance to the next level. Out of the difficult and miserable toil of his soul. Again, this is what happened on Matzah. His soul was not in a difficult position, and his soul did not toil on Pesach. It was his physical body as the Passover lamb that suffered on Pesach. It was his soul that suffered on Matzah. These two are connected, and one without the other is actually counterproductive. He will actually and continually see the light overflowing and providing complete satisfaction. When he was released from Sheol, he became an energy-based being. By way of knowing and understanding him, my servant, my co-worker and associate, will make righteous and upright, declaring absolutely acquitted and vindicated many because of their guilt. He shall bear. Honestly, therefore, it is right and correct, just and proper, and thus certain. As a result of him, I will apportion and disperse everyone's share with many in abundance. And with the empowered and enriched, he will share and apportion that which is valuable, based upon an orderly, sequential, and rational arrangement because to show the way to the benefits of the relationship along the proper path to a prosperous life, he exposed his courthouse and thereby eliminated the destructive vulnerabilities associated with the plague of death. And Yahweh makes it clear that it is calling Christianity is the plague of death. His soul, his consciousness, his persona, the essence of his life, was completely assigned and counted among those who indignantly revolted and oppressively transgressed, the openly insubordinate and especially recalcitrant, the flagrant criminals with a contrarian nature who deliberately infringed against the standard with errant approaches and fancy jests, because he himself lifted up and carried away the wrongdoing and offenses against the standard, including the errors in judgment, and therefore the guilt which would otherwise lead to incurring a penalty, including punishment and condemnation. And therefore, on behalf of those who transgress the standard with errant steps, he intercedes, sparing them in a manner which is helpful, beneficial, reaching out and meeting with them while pleading their case effectively, making the transgressors like the intercessor throughout the whole of time. So twice, Kabbal, he shall bear, when he's talking about my servant, my co-worker, my associate, will make righteous, declaring absolutely acquitted and vindicated many because their guilt, he shall Kabbal. And it's my conclusion that the statement in Bava Rishit that explains test, use this word to bring our attention to this explanation in Yashaya. And so that's why I wanted to go back and cover it, because I think it's one of those things where the lights go on. We have understanding if we just make the proper connections, and that you go from knowing to understanding. Knowing is a product of being observant, closely examining, carefully considering what Yahweh had to say. That leads to knowing. But understanding requires us making connections, and us making this connection between the Bava Rishit test and the pronouncement of its fulfillment in Yashaya 53, we make the transition from knowing to understanding. Anything you guys want to add before we go to the 22:14?
No, I'm sure we're going to go back to this later. I mean, at some point as we go through.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just some observations. I did most, not all of it, but I did through about 53:8. And
okay,
there was just some overall views. There was some, Plague of Death comes out tons of times, which is amazing. The first time first time you address that is, this is Paul being the plague of death, Christianity being the plague of death. How many times we'd find it in so many verses, and in this one it's in a lot, it's in the words a lot, because he talks about the plague, and he's didn't suffer illnesses, he suffered the plague, and every time I see that, I immediately start thinking about religion. You can't miss his religion and politics that he's talking about, and military, if you wish, but certainly the military, certainly the religion first, politics second, or a combination of the two.
Yes. Yeah. When you see plague of death, it's most overtly tied to Shaul, the wannabe false prophet, the wannabe apostle and false prophet, who wrote 13 letters that comprise a bunch of the Christian New Testament. And there are those who criticize me for saying that he wrote half the Christian New Testament. I actually said he was responsible for half the Christian New Testament. The 13 letters, while that might be half the books, it's not half the length. It's the realization that Paul is responsible for what's called the Gospel of Luke and for Luke's Acts of the Apostles. And Paul is the subject of about 90% of Acts. He is responsible for Luke because Luke was not an eyewitness, nor was Paul, but Luke was Paul's attaché, and So he, in the book of Acts, he clearly conveys Paul's agenda. And so you have to add those two, and then you have to look at Hebrews and realize that, well, Hebrews is not given the name of the writer. Hebrews is in lockstep with Pauline doctrine. So it's one of Paul's supporters or followers or publicists. And so you put Luke, Acts, and Hebrews along with Paul's 13 letters, and you have half the Christian New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they've rewritten just about everything else, too.
They certainly have.
Cover.
Yeah, they certainly synchronized
on that one as well. So.
Right. But, and the place where, I mean, Yah was unequivocal in Chabaouk, which was written 666 years before Paul would pen his first letter. And he described everything about Paul, you know, his nature, his attitude towards circumcision, his promotion of the guy, the idea that God died, his fixation against circumcision and the male genitalia, his arrogance, the fact that that he would claim authority over Gentiles. But beyond all of that, Yahweh called him out by name and said, Shaul is the plague of death. So when you're just trying to support the fact that, yes, the plague of death throughout Yeshaya 53, he's addressing politics and religion generally and Pauline Christianity specifically. And it's really appropriate for you to do so, even though I think God is more disappointed in his people creating Judaism than he is in Christianity. But Christianity was created by Paul. Paul was a Jew. And it has harmed his people more than any other religion. And it has become, far and away, the most popular religion in the world. And so plagues are massive. And so the ultimate plague of death would be the world's most popular religion. A one created by a misguided religious Jew. Saul, known to the world as Paul. That was quite an interruption there.
Absolutely, my thinking. It just articulated better than any of us. So that's. And I mentioned earlier too that you know it's so many of the words. If you look at the letters, are also. This is so more appealing to me. Maybe it's just because of now, and I understand a lot more than once before. This is so appealing to me on showing the picture of Yahusha. This is clearer than anything I find in any of the Gospels that I recall.
Yeah.
I don't go back and read them much anymore, so it's not rare that I do unless we're looking up something.
Yeah.
But
Yahweh
just tells you exactly. You cannot translate this stuff, or just look up words the way I do. JB, and you translate. I just look up the words, see what they all mean. But you cannot not get Yahusha in these passages, I mean verbatim. Every connection, every important connection is there. I won't bore you with all the little stuff, but as I was going there, just entertaining myself and going along with all these things, I was going, wow, that's another one, and that's another one, and that's another one, and that's another one. You know, you could just cite them one after another where he's being so specific.
Well, that's all true. There's one part of it that is very disturbing to me.
Okay.
And that is that this entire prophetic portrayal is focused on a singular concept, and that is of a lamb going to the slaughter on behalf of a sinful world. And yet, Christians are unable or unwilling to recognize this is a lamb going to the slaughter. Based upon mankind's propensity to be wrong about God. Well, if it's a lamb going to the slaughter, why can't you figure it out? That he is the Passover lamb. That there is no explanation for why Yahweh would present it as a lamb unless he is referencing Passover. And then you make the connection to, what day was it? that Yosha suffered this fate? Was it not Passover? Wasn't what's called the Last Supper actually a celebration of Passover?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Yosha say, I want to celebrate Passover with you? Wasn't he the Passover lamb? And you can't make the connection to Yeshaya 53, which is so clearly about Yosha, and yet you miss this connection to the Passover lamb? It's tragic.
You have to be willfully ignorant.
Yeah, it has to be willful. It's why I'm so sad in the realization that Yahweh himself can't say anything that will resonate with a religious person. That our presentations of Yahweh's testimony to a religious person is worse than a waste of time. It will aggravate them and they won't be able to comprehend any of it, can't process any of it.
And they'll just dig in deeper.
They'll just dig in deeper and get more adverse and more riled up to condemn the messenger because they can't process the message. You know, so here is an example where, Kirk, you're right. He's obviously speaking about Yosha, and obviously speaking about Yosha as the perfect lamb of Passover, accepting the sin of the world. And they can't make the connection that it was Passover, not Easter. And they can't then make the transition that this is what happens to the body of the Passover lamb, but then twice he's speaking of the soul and the torment of the soul, and they can't make the connection that that's when the soul, his soul, went into Sheol and suffered on our behalf so that we could be perceived perfect, vindicated right before God. When it's this obvious, when the plan is this perfect, when the words are this revealing, there's no excuse for not understanding them, for clinging to the plague of death in the Christian religion. Or even being, a religious Jew.
Yeah.
What's your excuse? He's predicting that, Yahweh is predicting that he will, that the hand of God, Yosha, is going to fulfill these things in this way. And yet there's not one in a million of them that capitalizes. So, again, I'm sorry for...
No,
you're right.
It's very
but I just wanted to emphasize that there's more to your point than just it presenting Yosha. It presents Yosha in a very specific role, with his body serving as the Passover lamb and his soul fulfilling matzah on our behalf.
Well, I just sometimes when I examine the words and it's so clear to me, and I'm not the sharp tool, and if I can't miss it, I just can't. I'm not aimed at the people who just don't care or don't care enough, you know, the average Christian. I just, it bothers me about all the preachers and the guys with doctorates of divinity, you know, higher learning, and how do they read this and come up with something else? Do they never look up these words? I guess they don't.
You know, I think that the people that do this are almost universally religious.
Yeah.
I think that the world is such, to answer your question, that somebody who is going to read this, somebody is going to try to make a nickel on explaining this,
mm-hmm.
has already made a decision to be religious. And because they're religious, they can't process it. They don't understand it. They can't process it. They're totally blind. They're impervious to it. They say even the very words of God will not resonate with them. And
but, you look at if it goes to a divinity school or, one of these religious, learning institutions, look at how many books they have. Patty's father actually went to school to be a minister at one point. He was a Lutheran, wanted to be a Lutheran minister, ended up not becoming one. But I looked at the bookshelf at their house and just all the books he had to have for school.
Yeah.
That's what they learn. They don't learn the Torah. They don't learn even the Bible. They learn these religious textbooks, these religious books that teach them the religion, not what the word actually says.
Correct. Correct. So the reason...
they don't teach them how to think, they teach them what to think.
That is correct. That's the nature of religion. It's not... In fact, I'm not even sure that's quite correct. They don't teach them how to think. They tell them what to believe.
Dogma.
Yeah, they tell them what to believe.
Yeah.
Never how to think.
No. What to think. Yeah, think this, believe this, teach this.
And they...
Yeah, that was ultimately what he was told was he didn't get wasn't able to become a pastor because he was told he could not sell religion.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, I got a note here from, I don't know if it was Terry that wrote this or Kirk, you wrote it, probably Terry, your wife that wrote it, who should that letter be addressed to? By the way, you don't need to write this. But if a few of you wouldn't mind, it could be helpful to me, but it would just be... to whom it may concern on behalf on my behalf. So I've been told who the judge is by name. I don't recall it right at the moment. To whom it may concern. If you feel like doing it, I'd appreciate it. So those are the answer to your question is that's half of it. The other half is, all right, so let's take somebody like ourselves, who are not religious, the vast majority of people who are not religious would have no desire, no interest in evaluating this text. None.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
They would view it as a religious test, and therefore... not something that would have any interest to them. So the people who are naturally thoughtful and bright and unbiased and who would view themselves as open-minded wouldn't even consider it. And then that brings us to the very few people who would say, all right, I'm not religious, but I am open-minded. I'm sure as heck curious. And I'm willing to go where the words lead. You know, I'm willing to dig in and see what I learn, and based upon what I learn, follow that evidence trail. Well, there's just not a lot of us. And the few of us that there are, we all have the exact same reaction. It's the reaction that, Kirk, you're sharing here, which is, just every word is a treasure. All leads in the same direction. And so our natural inclination is to share what we learn. It's just we're not doing it the right way because we don't have the big fancy jet.
We don't have the big jet, yeah. But if anything, we'd rather ride the back seat.
And he's really pushing for that. You know, I would have to just have this one disclaimer. And I've been doing this now for 20 years. Do you know how much of a donation and financial gifts that I have accepted over the last 20 years? I added them together just a few minutes ago.
Zero.
Zero. Zero. Zero. And by the way, that is the appropriate number.
Yes.
If you were to tell me, well, what would you like the number to be? I'm really happy with zero. You know, one of the nice things about zero is that I think that to receive payment for this would degrade it. The message is still Yahweh's. It's not mine. It doesn't degrade Yahweh's message. But it certainly degrades our participation in it. This is a labor of love. The contribution we receive from this is our own enrichment, our own enlightenment, our own confidence, our own sense of well-being, our enthusiasm and joy of listening to and studying with the greatest mind in the universe. And knowing that what we're doing is appreciated by the very creator of the universe, and that he's having fun with us in this process, you just don't want to muck that up. And I think it's also a sense of justified humility. And humility, I want to say it in the sense of, we're not humble about our relationship with Yahweh. We're excited about it. We're thrilled.
Ooh, I'll brag about that all day.
Boast about it, brag about it. You know, I'm delighted with our relationship with Yahweh. But it's not because of our qualifications. And just as these books and these shows are not based on our qualifications, this is not about us. It's about what Yahweh had to say. And so the last thing you want to do is charge somebody for it, because then you're saying, well, my qualifications and time are worth this kind of money. No. Not doing it. It demeans the whole process. No. I have an occasion, this opportunity to read Jackie's letters. And almost everybody that Jackie talks to and her extended family has embraced the covenant. And a lot of it is because of really how well that Jackie has come to understand this material. I mean, she's gone from being my most important and most diligent copy editor. She finds most of the mistakes in my writing. But long ago, she grew to the person who probably understands this material better than anyone. And she understands it better than anyone because she has devoted so much time to reading it and rereading it and thinking about it. And now she has powerful insights regarding it.
Yeah,
but it's also genuine. It's just also genuine. And so when she approaches her family, it's so real, it's so credible, she understands it so well that it resonates with people who are close to her, who really know her. And I was meeting with Kirk, JB, before you joined us this evening, that, gosh, we should have Jackie do this program.
But, I'd love to have Jackie join us.
Yeah, another letter about somebody that she had contact with that talked to somebody else who became part of the covenant, who reached out to someone else who became part of the covenant, and how marvelous these stories are. So,
remarkable.
It's remarkable, but that's what we're all doing here. You know, I had one of my childhood friends write me a note, because he passed. He was one of those passed along the story about the fancy preachers claiming that they needed a fancy jet to save the world. And he just said, "I want to thank you for what you've contributed to my understanding." And I wrote him back and I really like this guy. He's been a friend for so many years, and he's like Jackie and like everybody else in a way. He's grown to the point where he really understands the material and now is contributing to our collective knowledge. And I said, I appreciate that comment. We're really all in the same place. We're all learning from the same source. So, I wouldn't view myself as a teacher. I'm a fellow student. Happy to be a fellow student.
Always.
Yeah. So, that's and by sharing what you have learned, you come to understand it better, and you retain it more effectively. So it's really even sharing it in these books and in these shows, part of the learning process. Well, Kirkster, do you want to add something more to Isaiah 53? Do you want us to go on to?
The last thing I'll just say is, if you look at the most everything is verified in these letters as well, in the old ancient Hebrew letters. They as far as the one that sticks out most importantly is the shemek, which is that thorny bush symbol. I was just kind of amazed in 53 how accurate it was on every level I could go. And then I took the chart on the grammar and where you were talking about different things and checked all that. And yeah, that's exactly. You had one comment.
The grammar, isn't the grammar fun? You know what I just love about the grammar.
I have a question.
I'm laughing.
But I don't enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm laughing here because, I was a decent student in school, with one glaring exception. That was English. I was really bad at grammar, and so now to be in a position where I'm speaking about the merits and the insights that can be gleaned from Hebrew grammar. Yeah, I just laugh and say it's kind of like Yosha going to the mumbler, to Moshe, and saying, I want you to proclaim my name and message to my children.
I've had kind of the same thing. That was never my strong suit in school. I was great in the math and sciences and English.
Yeah.
But I think I realize, though, as I've learned more about Hebrew grammar, the reason is, you know, English grammar rules make no sense because it's just an amalgamation of different languages.
Oh, yeah.
Right. They don't make sense. You have to memorize 100 rules and 500 exceptions to each of them. Hebrew grammar rules make perfect sense, add so much to it. It's very much a reasonable language.
Right. Yes, I love it. It is. That's exactly my view. I was unable to be effective in my understanding of English grammar because the exceptions are greater than the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So it would never resonate with me. I'm uncomfortable in the hypocrisy of English grammar. But Hebrew grammar, you know, the thing about Hebrew grammar that is so marvelous is that it has a consistent theme. One is that it simply is. No past, present, or future tense. It's like the very spiritual energy that comprises Yahweh. The words that he uses convey his nature. He exists. I am. I was. I am. I will be. And so Hebrew grammar is consistent with the nature of light. Time simply exists. What a powerful thought. And then all of the stems are relational. They all establish a relationship between the subject and the object. And they describe the effect of that relationship based upon the action of the verb. What a perfect way to convey the only thing that matters to Yahweh, the covenant relationship. He chose a language that is perfectly suited to present relationships. And then lastly, while there are a number of moods, all of the moods boil down to a singular concept, expressing volition either in first, second, or third person. Free will. Relationships require choice. So, how could you have a better language? And I even like the fact that in Hebrew, unlike English, but like many other languages, most words have a feminine or masculine identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that for a number of reasons. One is it's much easier to see what is the subject and of the verb or the object of the verb because, in fact, you have to look for something that is masculine or feminine. And so it identifies. But also it conveys Yahweh's nature, which is both masculine and feminine. He manifests both paternal and maternal characteristics, as does his language. And most of the things that are important to Yahweh, including his name, are feminine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always so troubled that religious doctrines almost always are prejudiced towards men and prejudiced against women.
Mm-hmm.
And here is Yahweh talking about his nature being both maternal and paternal, and the fact that his very name is feminine. And just how important that is for our appreciation of God and the proper way to look at the place of men and women in a relationship. With Yahweh, we contribute both to our understanding of relationship. It goes back to that the understanding of why Chawa was provided for Adam, because she was a source to help him understand the whole nature of family and love and raising children so that he would understand the covenant collectively. And not only understand it, but the two of them could talk about the covenant and about Yahweh, enriching one another's life. There's so much to this.
Is there any? It's just a coincidence that the the moods and the voices are all only, there's seven of them?
No. I don't think so.
No. And, you know, some of the stems are just so remarkable. You know, the Hot PL stem where the subject acts on their own volition, where they have specifically removed themselves from the influence of society as a whole. But that's exactly the way that we come to our relationship with Yahweh. And that stem was used throughout this presentation, how important it is for us to understand it.
Yeah, that came up when he was talking about the people that are surrounding Israel, the people from the seashores and all in this, and the Hippel stem, because they're doing it to themselves. They have not only become, and I think you pointed out, they've not only been overwhelmed by their religion and politics, but they've come to believe it. They've done it to themselves.
Yeah, you know, and I'm...
I forget what the answer was. We'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, you know, and when I began translating, I paid no attention to these stems. I just really didn't. I wanted to know the meaning of the words and to see if I could create a more accurate translation just based upon the meaning of the words. And part of that was the fact that there is no influence of shown in the stems in any English translation. It's as if they weren't even there.
Yeah.
And then about the seventh time I was going through yada yada, trying to improve it, make it more accurate, I began to spend more time with the stems and tried to share their influences as to what that relationship was being conveyed, and also the same thing with the moods, with the volitional moods, and to a larger and larger degree to explain why some things are in the perfect and some things are in the imperfect. And, you know, it was, I'm sure, stilted and troublesome and not all that clear. And over time, have become more comfortable with it. But I remember doing so many shows where I was, you know, Chris says, okay, that's way too pedantic. You know, I'm not just, don't need the grammar lesson. Let's just stick to the meaning and not get carried away with the grammar. But the more I did this, and the more, gradually you do something a lot, you become a little better at it, the more I came to realize that a huge part of the meaning is conveyed through the grammar. And you never find any hint of that in any English translation.
But I'm sure JB agrees that for those of us who were starting out and still, because you include all that, is helps us to verify it once again, you know, and that this is what it really means. Because people are still go, I'm sure as people who are just starting this trip, still will go, well, this guy, who the heck is this guy, and how could this be right, because I've been told all those years it was such and such, and everywhere you turn. So that's to me, that was another arrow in your quiver.
It took a long time to figure out that error belongs in the quiver. But over time, I came to
something. It's hugely valuable.
It's hugely valuable. So Abraham, Father who raises and lifts up those who stand up and reach up, Father of the abundantly enriched, merciful Father, Father of multitudes who are confused and troublesome. It's like so many names and words in Hebrew. There's a dark and light side. Mm-hmm. And both are applicable. You know, Abraham was the father of Ishmael. Ishmael is the father of Islam. The multitudes who are confused and troublesome. But he's also the father of Yisrael and Yehuda and Yishak and Jacob. Mm-hmm. And therefore representing the father of the covenant, of the abundantly enriched, those who stand up and reach up, those who receive Yah's mercy. So he designated and proclaimed, calling out Kara. Well, you know, folks, this is a celebration of the Kara, of the Mikra, of the invitations to be called out and meet with God. This is not a coincidence that he used kara, because kara is very seldom used to convey the idea of said or spoke. Mm-hmm. Spoke in Hebrew is dabar. Said in Hebrew is amar. Amar is one of the most common verbs in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It means this would case. And so Abraham said the name of this place. That would be amar. And amar must be used 20 times more than kara.
Yeah.
And then dabar is used 10 times more than kara. And that would be, and Abraham spoke, saying that the name of this place. Neither of those two were used.
Yeah.
And so
I always do this like a town crier.
Yeah. You know, so why was kara used? Isn't it important for us to think about, wait a minute, that if he wanted to say said, he would use the mar. If he wanted to say he spoke, mm-hmm. he would use the bar. But he used kara.
Mm-hmm.
And kara means a lot more than proclaimed or called out. It means to invite, to summon, to meet, to greet, to read and to recite, to welcome. So, and kara is
the basis of mikra.
Not to mention.
Yeah.
But let's mention.
But go ahead.
Might that be a little bit important here? Might he be trying to tell us a little something?
Yeah, we just celebrated the mikra of matzah. And Pesach and matzah. That's what we just celebrated here. That's what he's trying to tell us. Really essential. That's why this language and these words are so spectacular. So Abraham announced the appointment of the welcoming encounter associated with a specific meeting which he had been invited and summoned, creating this proclamation to be read and recited in the, since we're talking about grammar, in the call imperfect. Call means, don't go to some nuanced interpretation here. Call means this is a straightforward relationship between subject and verb, and a subject and object. That this should be interpreted and understood literally. And imperfect means with ongoing consequences throughout the whole fabric of time. Unfolding results. The name, the shem of this place, of this site. This is Ha-Makom Ha-Hu. So shem of this place. Ha-Makom Ha-Hu. As one of the things that I didn't even realize until about a year or so ago, that when you see ma before something, like mikra happens to be a great example. It's kara with the mem before it. This is kum, which means to stand, to establish, to take a stand, with the ma before it. And so what it says is, think about who's taking the stand. Think about why they're taking the stand. Think about where they're taking the stand. Think about how the stand is being taken. But if you take the time to understand the who, what, where, why, and how of the kum of taking this stand, then you will come to understand something profound. Mikra. Understand the who, the what, the why, the how, and the where behind being called out and invited to meet with God. The ma before so many Hebrew words is so important because it's an interrogative. It says, I want you to question this, to think about it, to try to understand it, to seek answers. It's just a powerful insight into Hebrew, and this is Mahum. Understand this place. this home, this office, this source of direction in life, this place where Yahweh took a stand so that we might stand. So Abraham designated and proclaimed, called out Haran, the name Shem, of this place, Ha-Makum Ha-Hu, God, Elohim, the Almighty, Ra'ah, reveals. In this place, Yahweh is seen. In this place, Yahweh is experienced. In this place, Yahweh is present, providing perspective and understanding for the observant who pay attention to and consider Him. You know, He didn't say this is the place that Yahweh is worshipped. He didn't say this is the place that we lift up Yahweh in praise. He didn't say this is the place to fear Yahweh. He didn't say this is the place to believe. He didn't say this is the place to have faith.
No.
He didn't even say this is the place to be saved. He said, this is the place where God reveals, where He is seen, where He is experienced, where He is present, where He provides perspective, where He provides understanding. Oh, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. You know, if I can, mm-hmm. if you look up Ra, mm-hmm. besides being observant, observe the ram, you've got an observer on the, with the Ra, and you have the A, which is the Aleph, and then you have a henna or a hen or hay standing up and observing and acting and taking mm-hmm. action based on that because mm-hmm. it's in a walking position.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look up just three or four lexicons, it will say none of those things that the Christians that you were citing then, it will say to see. It says to put on display. Obviously, He's put the world on, He's put Yahusha on display there. It says to experience and encounter. Mm-hmm. Allowing one to see, to understand, to perceive, mm-hmm. to take into consideration, observe, mm-hmm. absolutely see and have power of vision, i.e. prophecy, mm-hmm. to discern, and thereby distinguish between two different things. And I don't know whether it was in the Nephil passive form, which would be appear, or a Hephil causative, which means to show, but it could have been put, so I didn't look that up, so I can't tell, but I assume it's one of those two.
This Ra'ah to this where Yahweh reveals is the call imperfect. So,
okay, so it's just straightforward.
God is literally being seen. That God can be experienced here. That you can perceive and understand who God is and experience Him here in this place. And doing so can have ongoing influence over time. And He can be seen and experienced here throughout time.
Yeah. And it's reinforced when you did Macomb, because it's a standing place in His home. I mean, I know you said in your commentary, but I found everything that you said in your commentary, hometown, standing place.
So, by the way, what place is this where Yahweh is revealed and can be seen?
Yeah.
The summit of Mount Moriah, isn't it?
Moriah.
Did Yahweh tell him exactly where I want you to go, that this is the summit? This is the summit of Mount Moriah. So the very place that Yahusha fulfilled Pesach and Matzah and then became the living embodiment of Bikurim is the place where Abraham is announcing, as he's inspired by Yahweh, and it's being retained and conveyed to us, that if you want to experience Yahweh, if you want to see Him, if you want the proper perspective on Him, this is the place to look. How many people in the world look to what happened between Abraham and Yishak and Yahweh and Yosha and the Pesach Lamb and Mount Moriah for answers? How many people search for God there?
Not many.
This is not the Temple Mount. This is not... That, this is on the summit of Moriah, undisturbed to this day. barren patch of weeds directly above the place where the upright pole became the doorway to life of Pesach, where his body was placed as his soul went into Sheol. What God wants to do and has done is reveal himself. He wants to allow us to see him, to perceive him, to understand him, to experience him. That's what Abraham was announcing. But it's far more than Abraham just announcing that this is the place, the summit of Mount Moriah, where God takes a stand for us in his home, that he can be seen and experienced. It is at the conclusion of the affirmation of the covenant, where Abraham himself has passed the test to demonstrate that he not only understands what God was offering in the covenant, but is responsive to what God is requesting of him. And in that context, in the presentation of how to participate in the covenant, Yahweh is revealed. That should be as important as any statement ever made by anyone at any time. That is the announcement that is being made by Abraham at this point. And where is that conversation recorded?
The Torah.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
Yeah. Would we know of this conversation if Yahweh hadn't shared it with Moshe?
Would we?
No.
No.
Yeah.
And so,
we're told
why did why did Yahweh share this with Moshe?
For us.
There's only one reason.
Yeah.
Here's how I introduced myself to Abraham, and these are the instructions I gave him for participation in the covenant, and this is what he did in response, and as a result of that, he is considered perfect. He has been vindicated, and he is right with me. Well, that's telling you, because God says he does not change, he is consistent, that if we listened to those same instructions, accept them, and act upon them, Yahweh will respond to us in exactly the same way. This is Yahweh revealing himself, what he's offering and what he expects in return, and also revealing his nature on what he has done through his mikra to enable the promises and the benefits of this covenant. And he's specifically opening the doorway to life with this dress rehearsal to Pesach 40 yovels later. And I think you'd have to look long and hard to find anything more just reassuring, enlightening, appropriate, pertinent, uplifting, enriching.
You don't need anything more.
Yeah.
I mean, this is.
It almost leaves me with this. You know, I have two responses to this. And maybe my response is not all that important, but and maybe I'm just going to share it because maybe it's something that you're all feeling. My first response is jubilation. That Yahweh gave this to us, that provided this for us, knowing that we could read it, study it, think about it, come to understand it, celebrate it, share it, accept it, act upon it, and that it's always been there for us. And that part of it is a celebration. And there's part of it that's just gut-wrenching to me. That the Creator God of the universe could have done all of this for us, shared all of this for us, and the vast preponderance of people reject him and choose the false gods of religion over him. That's just heartbreaking. It's hard to understand how so many billions of people have rejected the real God who revealed himself in this place and instead would prefer to embrace religion. And both of those reactions are strong.
Mm-hmm.
Showing the way to the benefits of the relationship, Asher, my favorite word, he spoke this day upon the mountain to observe and understand Yahweh. Asher. Demonstrating the importance of relationship. Revealing the proper path to walk to give meaning to life. To provide benefits. To lead someone to a joyful and happy place. To encourage the proper mindset. To enable someone to be correct. To walk along the right and proper, specific path to a prosperous life. Asher, showing the way, the benefits of the relationship. He spoke. Amar, Yahweh is revealing here that, you know, I have a word for spoke. I chose not to use it. The Almighty reveals, because that was about Kara, that he can be seen through his Kara, his Mikra. But here, he's saying, he spoke, he declared, this day, at this day, what was this day? It was Pesach. Explained this day upon this mountain, Moriah, did this so that we might observe and understand Ra'ah. We might look upon, view, witness, experience, encounter, consider the presence of, enjoy the perspective provided, and comprehend. This one now is the Niflu and perfect. Yahweh. The Almighty is Yahweh. The Almighty is not Jesus. The Almighty is not Allah. The Almighty is, he doesn't care what you call him. The Almighty isn't, he has many names. The Almighty isn't the Lord. The Almighty has a name. It's Yahweh. Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh. He spoke upon this mountain to observe and understand Yahweh. To look upon, to see, to view. This is the perspective Yahweh wants us to have of him. Of his love for us. That he would do all of this, just as it's explained in Yeshayah 53, that he would do all of this on our behalf. But you've got to be like Abraham. You've got to understand what God is offering, why he's offering, what he expects of us. And then you have to accept it. You have to act upon it, as so many have done and are doing. Fellas, what do you think about it? Asher Amar Ha Yom Ma Har Ra'ah Yahweh.
Pretty powerful statement right there.
That Yahweh, Almighty God, is not only revealed in this place, that Abraham spoke to show the way, to benefit the relationship this day upon the mountain on which to observe and understand. Yeah. We said before, you know, most English Bibles are one to render Ra'ah, which means to see, to look, to view, to observe, using the perception of sight to reveal, to offer perspective, to perceive and understand, as provide or provides. In Bereshit 22:14, that Yahweh provides. Well, yes, but that's not what the word says. Why do they do that? First, look at the word. Does it say provide?
No. There's nothing about
provides
it.
Provides perspective. You know, yeah, well, provides perspective. But,
okay, well,
but the emphasis on perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. He's not. No, I don't get it. Where they're coming from. Why would they do that? You know, was it a mistranslation in the Greek and the Septuagint, and this translated from the
carried over to the Latin?
Yeah. Ra'ah means to see.
Could be. It could be an accident.
It could be.
Well, they do it a lot. They sure make that same mistake over and over, don't they?
Yeah. Is there any that it's a verb written in the Niffle imperfect and that it means to observe, to see, to look upon, to view, to witness, to experience, to encounter, to perceive? That's what the verb means.
Yeah.
Why not pick, you know, one of those?
It's not like it's an uncommon word. Ra'ah is one of the most common words in all of the Hebrew language, I would say. It's probably in the top 20 easily.
Yeah, I think it's probably in the top 20. Certainly in the top 30 of verbs. It's not a difficult. It is not a difficult word to describe.
And I doubt that's one of the only times I've ever actually seen them translated as provide. Every other time, it's translated in some term of seen, saw, perceived. Yeah, all of those
right.
are abundant.
Right.
But it makes no sense to not translate it that way here.
Yeah. It is, in fact, the place on which Yahweh provided the means to fulfill his Passover promises.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is this is the place where we can correctly and absolutely, clearly observe, see, perceive Yahweh. You want to see him? This is where to look. Look at what he did for us through this conversation and test with Abraham and Yitzhak, and look at what he would do for all of us through his fulfillment of Pesach and Matzah in this place for the Yobel thereafter. Look upon what he's going to do when he returns to this place. This is the place, you know, if you want to see Yahweh circa year 6000 Yah on Yom Kippurim, this is the place you want to look. This is where he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's going to step down, return to the Mount of Olives, because he's coming back as light. But that's not where he's going to settle down. That's not where he's going to build his home. That's not the place where he is headed. He's always wanted his people to be oriented, looking to the east, to the rising sun, to the increasing light during the day. He's coming back due east so that he can establish this giant earthquake fault upon which waters are going to emerge to not only bring life to the Dead Sea, but to cleanse all of the muck that is in Jerusalem, creating this marvelous cascade of living waters upon which he's going to bridge from Dod's home to his home. And his home is going to be on Mount Moriah, right there on the summit. You want to see him? That's where to look. Don't look to the Vatican. Don't look to Mecca. Don't look to Washington. Don't look to your pastor. Don't look to your Bible. You want to see him? Look here. Look at what he is doing in the life of his children, in his home, Jerusalem, and Israel. And not just anywhere in Jerusalem and Israel, but on the summit of Mount Moriah, which is where the signs are posted to show the way, where Dod, his favorite son, built his home, where Yahweh's home will once again be established.
And where you discovered there's that building site is still empty.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
All these years.
Yeah, yeah. You've got faith temples on the Temple Mount.
Everything.
With the Dome of the Hoofy Print, Dome of the Rock, and with
Alaska.
Alaska Mosque. And so it's just nothing but pure, deadly pollution. The most vile of religious trophies. And so, it's going to have living waters just blow that stuff right down to the sea where it belongs. And the summit of Mount Moriah, nothing on it.
And that's kind of cool.
See that.
Yeah. Oh, when he returns, he's going to transform that. All of the religious and political rubbish and all of the political and religious people are just going to be gone. evaporated, all of it. And what you're going to see is the brilliance of Yahweh's light and the brilliance of his home. And I'm just imagining this bridge of light over these living waters and the magnificence of Dode's home, the favorite son, and the bridge that connects it over these living waters to Yahweh's home. And by the way, Yahweh's home is our home. Yahweh's home is our home. And just down the path across that bridge is a home that we will be invited to meet the most interesting, the most brilliant person who ever lived, the most articulate person who ever lived, the most insightful person who ever lived.
Dode.
Yeah, we will have the opportunity to share meals with Dode, to sing songs with Dode, to listen to Dode sing songs. Just and
because I'm more apt to do the listening than the singing.
Yeah, but think how comfortable it is. But you know, I see Dode as being a person at that time where we will engage him in conversation.
Oh, yeah.
So I even think that when Yahweh places his Torah inside of us and we have a much more complete, comprehensive appreciation and understanding of Hebrew and of his word, that I think that our communication with Yahweh is, it's still going to be more listening than talking, because he is more interesting than we will ever become. I do think it's going to become far more of a dialogue. And I think with Dode, I think Dode's whole nature is that Dode has the same, at least my sense is, that Dode's attitude towards what he has done and who he is and all of this is very similar to our own. He is very proud of, enthusiastic about his relationship with Yahweh, as we are. But he's also very mindful of his flaws. And so I think Dode's going to be somebody that we just have a really good time with. I don't see Dode as being in any way unapproachable.
I agree.
Yeah, I think he's going to be as every bit as approachable as Yahweh. And my sense is that with Yahweh at that time, that he is going to be as interested in what we have to say as we are in what he has to say. I think of that as I think of the time I spend with my little granddaughter. I am actually far more interested in what she has to say and what she's thinking than what I'm trying to share with her. I really want to know what she's thinking, what she likes, what she enjoys, what her reaction to certain things are. You know, she's two. And so the difference between what we know and how we think, is considerable. And yet I'm totally fascinated. I mean, just totally fascinated listening to her. I think the same thing's going to be true with Yahweh. I think it's going to be a marvelous time. But both of them,
Yahweh and Dode, wrote so much, they didn't write it not to share. I mean, they're teachers. They like to engage their students. They like to engage their families. So, of course.
Right. But I see this as Dode as a fellow student who wants to share with other students. I'm going to say, yes, I understand that Dode has a lot to teach us. But I think that Dode is a fellow student.
Oh, yeah. He's still human. He's just as human as us. He may have understood more than any of us at the time, but he's still not, he's not perfect.
We're all learning.
But he doesn't have perfect knowledge.
No, but he's the most brilliant person who ever lived.
Think about it like this. How much do you enjoy sharing and learning with other people? And I do, and Kirk does. And, that's the nature of everyone in Yahweh's family is we love to learn, and we love to share as we learn. He's going to have the same attitude, I think.
Exactly. He's just smarter than us, and closer, and There's no one that Yahweh loves more. No one that Yahweh is closer to. And so to be around him is just going to be a thrill.
Well, think about living in a world where everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, I know.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, no religion, no politics.
Yeah, we're all... Wow.
Yeah, we're all on the same page. We're all brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh.
All brothers and sisters. All... No hierarchy. Nobody even wants a hierarchy.
No.
Just all brothers and sisters. So cool. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I've just always been thrilled about is that Dode had a lot of responsibility. Yashayah, a lot of responsibility. We spent a lot of time. Moshe, a lot of responsibility. We really don't have any responsibility.
It's good.
I think it's just
be nice.
Total opportunity, no responsibility. I don't know how it gets any better than that. While you have access to and the attention of the creator of the universe as your dad, trying to do everything he can to make your life richer and better. And, you know, this idea is that the more souls who come to understand and accept Yahweh and what he's offering and act upon it, it doesn't make our inheritance any less, because the more people that share an inheritance, it makes it richer.
Sure.
More people to spend eternity with. Makes Yahweh's experience richer, our experience richer. And in a way, it's kind of neat that this idea that there would be so many people, so many souls, all there exploring, because there's just times when I'm sure we're going to say, all right, we learned a lot. Kirk, JB, and I, we've got this. We're going to bring some of our other friends along here. We all want to go out. There's a galaxy over there that we want to go have some fun. We're going to go, just spend some time there together. We might even transform into material bodies there for a while, because there's just a lot to experience there. And when we come back, we've got all your guidance. We know what we should and shouldn't do. We'll come back and report on our experience during the next Shabbat or Mikra, and share what we learned and what we did and how much fun it was. So, see y'all later for a little while. We're going to go over here and play. I think that's going to be part of the beauty and the joy of eternity.
I like that plan.
Yeah. Amazing concept, yeah.
Yeah, and how much fun it'll be to go there with friends and share the experience with friends. And just come back and say, this is really exciting. Kirk did better than the platypus. You should see this thing.
Pretty amazing little sucker. I don't know.
It's going to be hard to
say platypus.
Yeah. And JB down there in Texas, you created an improved version of the aardvark.
I'd settle for just getting rid of the heat during the summer.
Oh, my. Yeah, indeed. All right, fellas. Well, they only had one power outage during the program. We managed to. What I actually did when I got the computer back up? I printed the chapter out. Now, I don't know how I would have read it without any light.
I'm sure you could have found a way.
Yeah, I'm sure found a way.
You got all your flashlights working? Or you got lights on?
Yeah, I'm going to have to do better on my flashlights here.
Yeah.
One of the kinds I just kind of... there's always challenges. And so, saying, all right, okay, so the power went out at just the wrong time. It's about ready to read this. Now, okay, we had a plan B. You know, okay, you're go with the flow. Don't panic. So it turned out great. All right, fellas. Good night. We'll be back with you again.
Have a good night.
Have a Shabbat.
Good night, JB.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks, JB.
Bye.
Bye-bye.